Fine Beats. Perspective Podcast back again on the Zoom cast. You know, we couldn't stay away from y'all too long without getting the panel together. Somber moment, follow up to episode 56, the untimely passing of hip hop artist, rap star, movie star, DMX, aka Earl, aka Dark Man X. Like I said, we're on a panel Zoom cast. I will let the guests shout themselves out to you. All the way from D.C.
Hey, this your boy coming at you, coming in hot. Fire guns ready. Your boy, no other. Mr. Did you get what you paid for? Big no.
Yes, sir.
What's happening to everybody, to the panel? Hope y'all having a blessed day. Hope everything is going good. Let's get this thing cracking.
Yes, sir. And Coming up next.
This Kevin Boatwright, first cousin to Jabbar, Jermaine, Lil Jabbar. Just chilling, man.
Good, man. Good to have you, man. First time on the podcast. And yeah, we're going to have some fun. Oh, and
we got a
special edition. This next man hosts his own podcast. YouTube content creator, Instagram, TikTok sensation, but I'm gonna let him go ahead and take over.
What's going on, man? It's your boy Abdul Aesthetics back again for the Point of Perspective podcast. You know, this is actually my first Zoom meeting ever. Oh. So, you know, there's that. And yeah, much like he said, you know, Instagram, you know, not necessarily Twitter. I'm not really on Twitter. Y'all use Twitter? Because I don't really use Twitter like that.
Twitter, TikTok, man, you everywhere. What are you talking about?
All of that stuff. Everywhere. But yeah, you know, we here to talk about what needs to be talked about. You know what I'm saying?
Roger that. Roger
for sure.
That.
For sure.
Last but not least.
Hi, I'm Dad. Hey, Jabbar Perry Sr., man. So happy to be back here. So happy to be back here, man. Going back into this, this moment in time, not going to use somber for this, but I am super excited to be back here. Like I'd like to say, man, I'm glad to be a part of this. Proud supporting contributors podcast and ready to get it on, man, by Dark Man X. Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Dark Man X.
Well, like I said, me and Jabbar Sr. here, we did a quick episode on Friday, you know, to just touch on the passing of hip-hop icon DMX, man. And I thought it would be only right to get some other perspectives on his impact on the culture of hip-hop and movies alike, man. So here we are back at the Zoom cast on Point of Perspective. But y'all didn't come here to hear me talk that much. So I'm going to just turn it over to Mr. Did You Get What You Pay For?
Man. Rip X, and that's what I want to start it out with, at least. You know, the man left a very impactful legacy. And for the true hip-hop fans, for people who just don't know, people who tuning in, you know, if you've been hiding under a rock, a lot of your grimy street hip-hop movement when it really started, because if you take it in, you know, hip hop is a coastal movement, right? You know, each quote unquote coast, you know, side of the United States has their own movement at one time, right? So we just got out of the, I want to say, East Coast had it first. You know, DMX was around, but yet he wasn't really at the forefront yet. He was still doing a lot of battle rapping at that point. So then once the whole focus switched to the West Coast and then hit down south for a hot minute, you know, because it, around the same time, you know, we're talking about 98, 99, you know, right around the same time, like the South started to really come in. And then, man, that whole DJ Clue, the Rough Riders movement and everything was popping off at that point in time. And to realize like how big of an impact it is, you know, with a lot of people just started riding bikes because of the Rough Riders, the tricks they was doing, you know, I was there.
I am one of them. I am one of them.
See what I'm saying?
Yeah, he is. I remember that motorcycle.
The main reason I bought a bike was from that doggone video, but go ahead.
Yeah. Exactly. So, you know, that whole movement, you know, it was like he was really eclipsing even the top brass in New York as far as rap is concerned. Because now when this is the revival of Def Jam, or I call it the revival because Def Jam has been out for a long time. But this is their biggest big revival, right? And this is around the same time they made Jay-Z the president of Rough Riders, if anybody didn't know. Okay? Mm-hmm. So now, when you get in the brand Rough Riders, and I was literally just watching a documentary about it. It was so crazy that we're talking about it now. But did you know DMX never really got a whole lot of money off the Rough Rider label? Right?
Didn't know that.
He was the front man for it, but he didn't get no bread off of it. Now, he put that stuff in the documentary. He was like, yeah, you know, so for it. He wanted a percentage of this, a percentage of that. And even a lot of stuff with his masters, he never got certain percentages for, right? That's why he was having a lot of problems with going back and forth from, like, the rap game to the robbing game. You know, like, when DMX was spitting in his lyrics is what he was still doing at the same time, right? He was one of the rap artists that, like, really truly lived what he was talking about. You know what I'm saying? Like, he really lived that. And even during the time of him getting that bread, he was still doing it. I really think, like, you know, for everybody just saying, you know, Rip X, they don't really know the impact on the music. This cat had multiple albums, you know, that not only did it sell well, did it go platinum, but every album he touched in a row went platinum, right? Some of them went double platinum, some of them went triple platinum. But every album that he had until the later albums, this man was on top. And I mean, you know, when we talk about our top five rappers, nobody got him in the top five.
You know, and you know, that's it's one of those things where you can't deny, you know, his presence in the rap game, because you know, he has that distinctive flow, that distinctive voice, that distinctive animation, almost like Busta Rhymes, you know. But Busta Rhymes is not in my top five. That's not to say that he's not a great lyricist. You know, I just think you kind of like, for me, unfortunately, and I'll probably get some hate mail for this, but because like DMX and Busta Rhymes are so animated, to me, it overshadows their lyricism. You know, so I'm too busy paying. I'm too busy paying attention to the mechanics and the animation of them. And, you know, but and they're like, oh, shit, that's right. They good lyricists, too. You know what I'm saying? But I mean,
I'll give you that.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? So,
yeah, because especially, especially with Busta Rhymes, because, you know, with a lot of his older, like, earlier work, with that, and then the video's all in your face and shit.
Yeah.
But you're not really paying attention that he's really saying some deep shit.
Yeah.
And then you get to like, nowadays, where he's actually sitting down like, hey, listen to this track I made. You know what I mean? And it's like, wow, this cat has been saying this shit for years.
But it's crazy, because he started out before the, you know, Put Your Hands on the Eyes Could See, the Coming album. Right. But he was with Leaders of the New School. Like,
right. Oh, yeah.
I'm telling you, like, knew out of anybody out of the Leaders of the New School, you knew when Busta Rhymes got on that, when he got on, it was like, you knew it.
Yeah.
You knew it.
Yeah.
You know, Charlie Brown had an issue with Busta Rhymes for years, right? And they eventually buried the hatchet on that. So, you know, Jabbar Senior, you know where I'm going. It was a big thing, you know what I'm saying? And really the one who really squashed the beef between them two was Fife Dawg. Rest in peace, Fife.
Dawg,
right. Yep. So when Fife Dawg had that shit came out, like when he was talking about he was the 5 foot general, that's what he really was. Yeah. He was that glue that held them together, you know what I'm saying? And like how we're putting things in perspective now, you know, from back in the day to now, and even, you know, Jabbar Junior, you're the youngest one, and you even can like understand like that level, that gravity, you know, that essence, that force that pulls you together. Because like when I listen to an album, I listen to it front to back.
Yes.
Right. And then I'll go back and I'll say, damn, hold on, I missed something on that, but I just have to let it play through because I like to see a project all in one. And then I'll go back and say, I don't like that track. I don't like that track. That track was kind of cool. But really, albums is only going to give you like four. I'd say probably three good tracks. Three really good tracks.
Yeah.
One that you can like freaking zone out to. One that's like, yeah, I need to have that energy right now. Or you got that one that you can kind of chill and like you just lay back chilling with your lady or whatever the case might be.
Right.
Now, on the flip side of that, we talk about Busta Rhymes, but DMX, that first album?
That was fire. Mm. That was fire, I'll tell you.
Front to back.
Wow. Wow.
You know.
And everybody was bumping it. Go ahead.
No. It's funny that we're talking about this because I have a funny story. I can't remember which album it was. I believe it's Dark and Hell is Hot. Is that the one? The one where he was covered in red? Which
blood? Which album was that? Yeah,
that's flesh in my flesh, blood in my blood.
That one. Now the intro to that album is you know, What Y'all Really Want, or What Y'all Bitches Want, or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I remember being like a kid or whatever, and my older brother Noni had that CD, and I was listening to it, and it was a lot of cursing, and I was just going off saying every single curse word. And then my older sister, Corinne, at the time, she was like, oh, so you cursing now? And so she went and told my mama, let's just say it didn't really work out for me that day. that's one of the many memories that I have listening to DMX. DMX has always been like one of my top 10, you know, not necessarily top five, you know, just because it's so many other artists came after him. And I probably only got like maybe one or two artists that came before him, above him. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
But you know, I want to touch on. I don't want to like take over the whole thing, but I just want to touch on, you know, my biggest beef with not just DMX, his passing, but a lot of great artists.
Well, I want you to hold that thought. Let me hear from Kevin real quick.
Okay, go ahead.
Kev, your thoughts on DMX impact?
I actually met the guy twice. One time at Palladium with our cousin Terry Green.
Oh, okay.
And then and I went out to the Rough Riders event that they had in Myrtle Beach, at the Black Myrtle Beach, where they was going down the tracks doing their tricks and stuff. And I took two pictures with him. I think Terry Green got my pictures, but I actually met the guy, and he actually talks the way he raps. And then another thing I didn't know, that he was a little shorter than me. Nobody knew that. Because every time we was looking at him, we was looking for him, and we see this midget guy walking by, and we was like, that's DMX. We was like, oh, shoot, we didn't even know he was that short. And another thing, Yeah, man, I feel like he was one of the guys, one of the head generals in the late 90s repping for New York, because at the time, Master P was blowing the heck up. It, you know, Master P was running just about everything. Every time you hear the radio, it was more Master P people than anybody else. And see, the only people from New York was like Jay-Z, DMX, maybe Nas. You know, Wu had their thing still. But other than that, I put him in my top 10 because he was more of a lyricist than like the entertainer, like Busta Rhymes and them y'all was talking about.
Right.
Because he was doing a lot of battle rapping. And on one of my mixtapes that Terry had given me, it was back with Biggie and all them. When they was putting out mixtapes, DMX was actually on it. And we never knew, me and my brother never knew that was him the whole time, because we thinking he's part of the Lox or whatever.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm telling my age now, but we had that cassette back in, we used to go to Manifest. The Manifest always had the mixtapes and stuff. And that's what me and Devin used to get, mostly the mixtapes, because we wanted to hear the new artists. And most of the time, you know, DMX was on a lot of them stuff from, I want to say from 96, when Tupac and Biggie started having their beef, from 96 to about 2000.
And you're absolutely right, because his style used to be different. Like his rap style used to be different. It wasn't as grimy and street as it was. And then, you know, are you saying that you met DMX at Palladium? I was there that same time.
Yeah.
And then when they had the Hard Knock Life tour, when they came to North Charleston Coliseum, we did private
security. That's the one. Yeah.
And then. Other than that, they came down, DMX came down a second time with the Lox. I want to say they went to, what's the name of that damn club?
The Palladium or?
No, it was a club in downtown Charleston.
Acme?
I think it was Acme. It probably was Acme because.
Yeah, it was Acme.
They shut down the battery that day because it was on a Sunday and they shut down the battery.
Yeah.
And it was DMX, it was the Lox, it was Onyx. And that's when they did the Shut 'Em Down remix. And that's the first time I heard that. And I lost my fucking mind. That was probably one of for people who don't know who are listening, if you want to hear a track that is full of Black Air Force One energy,
yes.
You listen to that goddamn Shut Them Down remix with DMX, and you're going to want to slap everybody. And when I tell you, with so many fights, and we're talking about the impact of it, like, yeah, it wasn't nobody scared that night. No guns, everybody fight.
Man. Now, he did a song in Belly that I truly love, is one of my top DMX songs. Is that Top Shotter song with the Mr. Vegas and what's the other dude name? Sean Paul.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah.
What song is that?
Here Come the Boom. That's what it's called. Here Come the Boom.
I remember that song.
Because they played that, I think they played it like once in the Belly movie, and I was stuck on it.
I gotta rehear that one. I it's probably been a minute since I heard that one.
Yeah, man.
Abdul Aesthetics, man, what was you saying about your major beef with the passing of artists and whatnot?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, much like I'm pretty sure everybody at this panel, I really fuck with Master P. And Master P always has words of wisdom in times like this. And one thing he always says is that, why do we give these people their flowers while they're here? Why we got to wait for them to be gone to show them the respect that they truly deserve? Because nobody really has anything bad to say about DMX. And so, you know, of course, when word got out, like, what was it, like 4 or 5 days ago that he was in the hospital for the problems that he was having, I was like, in my mind, I'm like, yeah, if he ends up passing, he's going to be the trending topic for about a week, maybe 2 weeks, and then the world's going to move on. And so, you know, that's just like now all these people coming out with like, you know, good deeds that DMX did when he may have stopped by the job. They may have seen him at a Walmart. They may have seen him out and about. And they're like, oh, DMX stopped and, you know, did this for this guy. He stopped and helped me with it. And I'm like, okay, I get it. Now that his name is relevant, you feel the need to put that out there for whatever reason. But why wait? Like, why would you wait for this? You know what I'm saying? This guy has put on so many people. This guy, and what Nora said about him not even getting as much money as we thought he was from certain situations, I didn't even know that. So for him to do the things he did, and I'm pretty sure that wasn't the only, you know, type of endeavor that he didn't get paid what he was rightfully deserved from. So for him to do everything that he did, and people still, you know, and still put people on and get what he got at the time, I just truly can't stand that. You know what I'm saying? It's right, like right. When Nipsey died, all of a sudden everybody's a Nipsey Hussle fan. God, what's his name?
Even name a Nipsey album. You know what I'm saying?
One Nipsey Hussle song. Couldn't even name one Nipsey Hussle song. Now everybody want to hustle and motivate. You know what I'm saying? When what's his name? When you just named him Fife Dawg. When Fife Dawg died, now everybody's a Tribe Called Quest fan. You see what I'm saying? I'm just like, man, what is it about these people being here?
Well, you know,
that you just can't show them, you know, the respect that they deserve. Well,
let me shine a little bit of light on that. It is. I don't think it's totally the public's fault. I think it is really up to the commercialization of what is hot at the moment. You know, so I'm gonna just drop some names. Migos, you know, these different Trash. Artists. I hate to say it, Cardi B with WAP and Megan Thee Stallion.
Trash.
When they said, I don't know, I agree with you.
Garbage juice trash.
When they sit and they promote and shine a light on these particular artists, so bright artists like Black Thought, DMX, LL Cool J, even Kendrick Lamar, who is current, you know, J. Cole, you know, they don't get a lot of attention as they should get for being pure of the form of hip hop. But we can, right. You know, like I said, but yet, you know, Megan Thee Stallion stays in the news. Cardi B stays in the news.
That's the thing. Like, we always talk about on this podcast, right? Every time, and we all know that goddamn thing we call, hate to say it, but it is what it is. The status quo remains the same.
Mm-hmm.
It don't change. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you gotta have some ratchet mofo out there that's gonna sell their soul for the bag. And like we talked about in the last, was it not the last podcast, but the last podcast we were together, it's only a matter of time. You know, Cardi B on her way out. What is she transitioning into?
Hopefully.
they normally get a 5 to 6 year run.
Hopefully. Yeah,
she coming up close on it. You know what I'm saying? Because now you got Megan Thee Stallion. Now you got the other chick, Sweetie Swati or whatever.
Sweetie.
Yeah. So it's that trending. That's what's trending. So all of these females that's coming in, and you got so many dope female artists. Like, you know, even what's her name from New York? She's a good artist. Just got it. Well. She's on a reality show with her husband. Damn, what's her name?
Remy Ma.
Remy Ma. Yeah.
So
Remy.
Now, there's a chick now in Louisiana, 3D Nati, bruh. She will murder these chicks, lyrics alone, but she don't come off with that whore mentality image.
We know why that is. That's a whole. I mean, somebody please remind me in the text message. But that's a whole nother episode. Just what?
Make sure I'm on that episode. That's all I'm saying.
What direction they want, you know, the younger generation to follow and why? Like that's a whole nother. And we all know that. So let's not go too far off it. Jabbar Senior. Like I said, I know we jumped on the podcast this past Friday, episode 56. But you got anything you may have left out about DMX that we didn't cover?
You know, just, you know, it's a few more days that's passing through and whatnot. Just thinking, you know, for some reason, I wouldn't say for some reason, because my mind wandered like that, but I thought about Marvin Gaye, you know what I'm saying? And Marvin Gaye died, and I always remember that night, you know, back then came on the ABC News special report, singer, songwriter, composer, Marvin Gaye, you know, from his father and all that stuff. I was like ironing my shirt for school the next day. And I'm like, oh, snap, you know, because Sexual Healing had just came out, you know. So at the time, you know, for Marvin Gaye, you know, he was, you know, still relevant and on a massive tour for a new album, a new promotion. But, you know, his effect and his range, Marvin Gaye, something like DMX, because of the range of his artistry, and, you know, and of course we've had a lot of other entertainers, artists that died abruptly, but I just kind of stuck with me because, you know, the impact of Marvin Gaye, his mystic to me, like I said about DMX, his mystic side, you know? And so Marvin Gaye had a way with his words and the way he composed and everything. And so what keeps sticking in my mind is Marvin Gaye's song, What's Happening, Bro? You know what I'm saying? And I'm like, man, so I got them. I just want to kind of shoot out some of the lyrics to the song. This is a song, if you're familiar with the Marvin Gaye What's Going On album from back in the day. Yeah. And it's the second, I believe it's the second song. It's right after What's Going On. And so the music is kind of the same, the composition is the same, and it flows into another song. And the lyrics go like, let me just read a few of them. Hey, baby, what you know, no good. I'm just getting back like you knew I would. War is hell. When will it end? When will people start getting together again? Are things really getting better, like the newspaper said? What else is new, my friend, besides what I read? Can't find no work, can't find no job, my friend. Money is tighter than it's ever been. You know, so I'm just thinking, Jermaine, because when we did that podcast, he was reading a lot of, you know, DMX lyrics, and it was really, you know, deep and rooted into your soul, I guess. And I'm like, man, so this Marvin, you know, Marvin Gaye lyrics just started popping. Man, you know, in similar fashion, you know, where do we go from here? You know, we losing these beautiful people in some cases in their prime. But if you don't die, you're supposed to, you know, you're really in your prime still. Mm. And we wouldn't know exactly, like for me with Marvin Gaye, what else could he have accomplished? And DMX, like, and I'm not trying to compare the two for any other way, you know, just what's going on in my head. Just think of the impact these cats leave. You know what I'm saying? What they leave us with, this legacy of theirs, you know? Yeah. And I just, like I said, for me, you know, it just kind of, it put me back into that Marvin Gaye thing. Of course, I can go to Prince, Michael Jackson, you know, Fife Dog, man. Y'all start talking Fife, man. That's like my brother. Because, you know, just like what Norris was talking about, leaders of the new school and all that stuff, man, and how Fife has squashed that beef between Charlie Brown and Busta Rhymes. But you're right, because remember that song, Stereo, when all of them guys got together.
All of them, yeah. Tongue,
y'all, everybody in podcast land, go back to our hip-hop podcast, you know, because I do mention the Native Tongue and how, you know, at the time, the late 80s, the early 90s, and what was new in rap music at the time, man. You know, of course, all these guys around my age. So it was a real good time to be. But yeah, Busta Rhymes was that guy to bring it all home. Because, you know, after when that song Scenario, and it's like when we first heard it, we wait for Busta. We wait for Busta because we know he's going to bring it home, you know, because he was that hot back then, right? But still is, you know, and the rest
as
of the
guys. As I combine with the reel up, rewind, wheel up, heel up, get the back up, rewind.
Yeah,
powerful
man.
Impact.
Yeah.
From the
boom
cannon,
from the cannon.
Yeah.
You said Scenario? Yeah,
Scenario. Yeah.
That here we go. Yeah. Yo, here we go. Yeah. Yo. It's all
now,
okay.
I tell you like this, listen to Scenario, the original, and then listen to the what's the Scenario remix.
What's in there? Remix.
Yeah, the remix is even better. Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Okay,
sir.
Man, I'm gonna do that.
Well,
yeah,
it,
man,
Sounds like we might have to do another hip hop episode coming up here soon.
Yeah, I'm down.
Yeah. I'm ready to go.
It's so much jewels, man. It's so much music. It's so much talent. You know, right. And these are the things that impact us. You know what I'm saying? Because we are the culture. We what fuels the culture. It's a lot different now because they're just allowing whoever the trend and wear dresses and
I was about to say that too.
Don't worry,
nonsense.
We are going to touch on that shortly. Trust me.
Yeah. So, and it's like a lot of these artists, quote unquote, have no substance. You know what I'm saying? Like,
shit. 95% of them.
Thank you. So now we're talking about DMX and his iconic status. You know. What it reminds me of? It reminds me of when John Cena and The Rock had their little tour. And The Rock, his promo cut was, we go from the iconic Raise the Dead Man, The Undertaker, to the badass beer drinker Stone Cold Steve Austin, down to the people's champ, eyebrow raising, hell raising, now to you can't see me.
Can't see me.
Right.
You can't see me.
That was hilarious.
That was hilarious.
Wasn't it?
But you know,
Jay, we gotta do a podcast.
But you know, it's so crazy that The Rock showed you how masculine the levels came to a guy talking about fruity pebbles and you can't see me. You know, not to take anything away from, you know, because and the crazy part is he was really athletic, muscular build, but the character that he played was really soft. It was really soft compared to Stone Cold getting beers thrown in the ring and drinking two beers at the same
two
time.
At one time.
You know, you got The Rock talking about eating pie, know, and this
point,
you know,
so and little known. Not to go too far left, but little known thing I found out by watching a shoot episode on YouTube randomly just one night, that they wanted originally John Cena to come out and be one of the Ultimate Warrior's disciples. They were going to do a backstory and everything because they say he had the build, but he had a little bit more charisma to him.
Mm-hmm.
And then they said, "Nah, we just going to go with the whole rap thing." I'm like,
know how he got his foot in the door. We know how he got his foot in the door.
Yeah.
We can have a whole nother episode about that shit too.
For sure.
Man. I mean, just really in closing with DMX, man, the type of music that he put out, man, was gritty. It was dark. And just like you said, Norris, a lot of the stuff in his music was what he was doing, you know. I mean, a lot of the stuff, you know, and without going into super, super details, you know, I just prefer people, if you haven't, go on YouTube, you know, some of his radio hits and, you know, get some of his, you know, straight, grittier, freestyle battle hits, you know. But I mean, like Norris segue into it, you had a rap, and this is the crazy thing. He actually is a good lyricist. But you had rapper Kid Cudi paying homage to I forget who it was.
Kurt Cobain.
But he thought by paying homage to this guy that he should put on a flowery dress and perform on national TV on Saturday Night Live.
I'm still trying to figure out how in the hell he's paying tribute to a dude that shotgun himself in the face.
Face, yeah. Suicide.
Man,
to address
why and why? Listen,
just to address.
I'll say this, and then I'll just let y'all take over. why is it that when the black entertainers, the musicians, the actors, or whatever, they pop, they have their little 5, maybe if they're lucky 10-year spat where they're really on top, they go cold, and then they come back in a dress, like. What? And then after that, now they get to pop again. What is up with this dress thing? You see what I'm saying? Like that whole Kid Cudi, like, who really is checking for Kid Cudi right now? Somebody,
nobody.
Please.
Nobody. Nobody. I ain't been checking him since day and night.
Now he's the trending topic for the next week or some shit. You see what I'm saying? And don't be surprised if he puts out a album or, you know, some music or some shit like that. Like, come on, man.
It's shock factor, right?
In the words of the great Dick Gregory, it's all a game. It's all a game. But go ahead, what you been saying?
Hey, Jabbar Senior.
It's shock factor.
What do you think, man?
And they can't go off of their own merit no more. No. That's the problem. That's the problem. Like, they have to do the dress thing. They have to be effeminate. They have to do whatever, because that's what's trending, right? And that's another free real estate, right? Yeah. People don't know. It's free real estate. Like, if the first thing you want to do now, let's answer this question, right? Let's put this question out there in the ether. How in the fuck did he get a slot on Saturday Night Live? What did he put out before then?
He had nothing. He had to agree to put that damn dress on. I tell you that shit.
I mean,
come on now.
Guns in the holster.
Exactly.
You know what time it is. So now you got these young artists who coming up looking at it like, oh, well, I got to do the same thing, because it's only a matter of time. That, you know, the Migos, they gotta either get into a dress or some weird shit happen. Who else is hot out there now? You know, for male artists, they try to get Kendrick Lamar, but that ain't going to work, because the best thing Kendrick did when he put out To Pimp a Butterfly, and we had the Black Panther coming out, and he did the album, was the best thing for his career. And the reason why is because now he can coast. He can coast. Right?
He's been coasting.
He's been coasting, because no matter what Kendrick Lamar comes out with, it's definitely going to sell, because people genuinely like him.
Yeah.
Same thing I'm talking about with the DMX situation. You know, no matter what he did, when he had that incident where he had the SUVs and they were acting like Secret Service, and they got on the plane and shit, and he got arrested.
he was impersonating the FBI.
I'm telling you,
he even set up his car in a police car, didn't he?
Yeah, DMX is a fucking legend. When I tell you, he got away with so much shit that people didn't know about he did, it's crazy. Like, you're like, no, he didn't. It's one of those things, like, when you see it and you read it and you hear about it, you're like, that ain't happened, nah. But to find out, it really did happen.
Right. Remember he got locked up in Greenville, South Carolina? So when he was in Greenville, that's what he was doing?
Yeah. He pulled somebody over. He was a policeman, pulled somebody over.
Oh, okay. Because I remember he got arrested, though. He got pulled over in, like, Anderson, South Carolina, something.
Yeah, right outside of Greenville.
Okay.
Yeah.
That was when he was you know, taking that stuff.
Well, he been on it for a while. I mean,
He never stopped.
Was a phase he was of everything, probably. But, yeah.
Fat Joe said a story that he had just got a big check from one of his songs, and they was all kicking it at a club. And then they was doing something out in the street, and then he went into a supermarket and robbed the people after he just got a fat check. And he was like, yo, what is this dude doing?
Well, I mean, it's like Nora said, man, the stuff DMX been rapping, he was also doing, you know? Yes. Nothing really surprised me. Go ahead, Jabbar.
Yeah, that kind of put me in my Old Dirty Bastard, man. You remember pull up in a limousine to the food stamp office with his girlfriend, wife, or whatever.
I remember that.
You know,
and all the kids.
I remember that one.
Yeah, you know.
This how I get my money.
and of course, you know, he left here untimely. And but you know, it's that part of life, man. Where, you know, what's the saying? Art imitates life, or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's like in the reverse, man. It's like they're ahead of this curve, and they own some more other stuff. But that stuff with this Kid Cudi deal. I mean, what's I mean, that's the going trend now.
Now,
you know what? What's I mean? I don't know. No. It's like the dude got a spaghetti strap.
Love it.
Yeah. Flowy dress on, doing a performance, and I'm like, man, this is like, it's too much, man. Could we? Nah, this too much, man. I it's like to me, I'm not gonna, you know, get too heavy because I got a bunch of thoughts. But how often do people steal black culture, promote it, and leave black people in the dark, or leave black people out of it? We don't get anything out of it, but they got, you know, like the civil rights movement, black people getting killed, but white women getting most of the benefits, all of them, you know, stuff like that, from affirmative
every
action.
Aspect of society.
So now,
every single
got this,
aspect of society.
This, exactly. So this genre of rap music, you know, it's like, man, we're going to let them hijack this thing like they've done everything else? And of course, the answer is this.
Now, see,
you know, this has got to be some of the great. I mean, like, what?
I'm gonna say this. One of the greatest rappers that I, in my personal opinion, of all time, J. Rue the Damager. Right? He got a song.
Oh man!
My favorite song by J. Rue is called Jungle Music. And
Jungle Music.
Towards the end of the song, he says this word for word: "For too long, you've abused it on the low, used it, and called it jungle music." That song came out when? When did that song came out?
1990s.
Come on now. And it's just, it's the same cycle being, you know, repeated over and over and over and over again, you know, and it starts out as a little joke here and there. Like, you know, you might see, you know, a white person in a movie, a white person in a funny movie saying nigga. And then everybody like, oh, hee hee ha ha ha. Let that shit ride over and over until 10 years later. Now that shit becomes a trending topic. Now that shit is cool to say, and it's really nothing you can do because you've allowed these people to do this thing over and over again, and you thought it was funny. You know what I'm saying? So now if you say anything about it, now you're the bad guy. Now what are you talking about, bro? This is normal. This is cool. You're the weird guy. You see what I'm saying? This is the shit that goes on, and, you know, people just have done nothing about it. You know, people just think it's funny, it's cool. You know, oh, this person is invited to the cookout. Like, what the fuck is that? What is that? Who came up with that dumb shit? Like, come on, man.
First thing is,
cookout is a code.
Yeah,
cookout is a code.
And let me back up further. Nobody who don't share my complexion says that word in front of me, rather it's a coworker, somebody I'm cool with in passing. I can honestly tell you, and I was born back in 80. And I'll tell you right now, no one has had the courage to say that in front of me. Now I only can speak for me. Now, if you allow motherfuckers to feel that comfortable, that burden is placed upon everybody that shares my complexion to handle that. And a way that they feel appropriate. Doesn't always mean it has to end in you breaking somebody's face, but you have to draw the line in the sand when it comes to using certain language. That's why I don't use certain language around people who don't share my complexion. Just so that they cannot feel comfortable to say off shit in front of me. Because if they do, it is my duty to check it. That's the first thing. The second thing is I never use that phrase either, invited to the cookout, you know.
Yeah,
I don't use it. I don't knock people.
It's trendy.
Yeah,
it's
trendy. I don't knock people who do use it, but I don't use it. Okay. Like if I rock with you, no matter what your skin complexion are, you can roll. But I'm not saying, he cool. He can come to the cookout. Like I just don't use shit like that.
And then my biggest beef with that whole thing is that motherfuckers want to embrace other cultures, other ethnic backgrounds for doing shit that we do naturally. You see what I'm saying? Like, oh, this white guy can sing a little bit. He's invited to the cookout. Oh, this guy can dance a little bit. He's invited to the cookout. Oh, like, why are we praising people outside of the culture for doing things that we do naturally? Shit that take them years to figure out. Like, what? Why? And it's like, and then we turn around, and then we turn around and want to shoot a motherfucker for stepping on our shoes.
Yes.
Come on, dog. Come on, dog. Self-hate. Listen, I know. You're right.
It's generational. It's a generational curse that is hard to break. There is no ceiling jutsu for this one.
Ceiling jutsu.
It's not like, oh my God, we just had there was a big incident that was all over social media about the Jordan 1 Carolina blue color that came out, right? They fighting in the mall. Somebody was stretched out already. Oh. Female got hit by a dude.
Over some shoes.
Over some sneakers.
Over some shoes.
Over okay. Here's the thing. Over some sneakers that, guess what? In the next 6 months, they're going to come out with another colorway.
Another colorway.
Yes.
Another colorway. I don't understand. And see, that's another thing that I don't understand. And like, cats used to literally make fun of me for not wearing those type of shoes. And I'm like, bro, y'all literally spend... The only difference in these shoes when they come out is that next year they're going to be more expensive. That's the only fucking difference. Same color scheme, same design. I had cats that I went to school with back in high school. It was either 2 or 3 years ago. I'm not good with shoe names. So it was the red. The Jordans were red, white, and black. It was the top was red. The sidewall was white and the bottom was the top was black, the sidewall was white, and the bottom was red. Whatever Jordan that is. And Katz was like, oh yeah, man, these shoes different than the last year. I'm like, how? And he was like, oh well, see, last year the tie-in design was a little bit different. So this year you can see a little bit more of the Jordan logo. I'm like,
bullshit. Let me tell you about that, right? Let me, you know, That's my arena right there, right? Because I'm a sneakerhead, number one.
Right.
I used to work at Foot Locker number two back in the day. A lot of people don't remember that, but yeah, it's some real shit, right? And first of all, like, the history of Jordans, Jordan shoes are made to patent after Jordan's foot. Because Jordan is pigeon-toed and bow-legged. I'm pigeon-toed and bow-legged. Those are the only shoes that actually fit, and they last longer, right? For me. It was a comfortability thing. Now, when they make these shoes, right, the company makes so many pairs, right? It's not that people were saying, oh, well, they only have about so much. No, because they know exactly that people are going to buy them, and they're going to run out of the original stock. So they keep some, and they ship it back, and they deconstruct the material and just say, hey, I'm going to put patent leather here. I'm going to turn that white into a red. Now you got to know a whole new shoe. I'm telling you, and when I found this out, it was the most ingenious plan ever, because now it's designed to keep the quote-unquote sneaker culture, which I fucking hate, because they don't. They put this whole reverence on, like, these shoes. Oh, these are grails, and these are like, no, those grails. Shoes are fucking trash.
But, you know,
trash. And the reason why they do that is to keep people in perpetual debt.
It's a marketing strategy. You know, it's a marketing strategy. True. And at the end of the day, whether it comes to shoes, certain clothing, designer clothing, I don't ever knock somebody for where they spend their money. You know, I got a thing with watches, right? I like watches from exotic watches to digital watches, retro. That's my thing, you know. So you ain't gonna tell me not to drop $500 or $1,000 on the watch. It's my money. I pay for it, right?
Jeez,
right. So with that being said, I got no problem with sneakerheads. Hey,
and that's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
we're saying the same thing. Yeah, it's not a problem with it. It's just the fact that, you know, would you buy the same silhouette watch in like multicolors? That's the question. And if that's you, cool. Yeah. You know, you can't knock somebody like for, you know, buying some what they call off-brand sneakers or whatever the case might be, because half them shit go to the outlets anyway.
Yeah. Anyway.
Mm-hmm. They go to the outlets. Like, I've seen it. I mean, I remember back in the day, you could go into the shoe store and be like, hey, let me get the Jordans and whatever, whatever size, blah, 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 cool. And then some people get buyer's remorse. So then they wear it like out once, realizing there's 50 motherfuckers wearing the same shoe the same night. Now they got buyer's remorse. And then they're like, oh, I'm going to take these back. No, now you stuck with that $200 bill.
Mm-hmm.
You stuck with it. Then now how they do it is like they charge you a restocking fee. So now you just lost out money. They got money from you and then you want to take them back. Yeah, you got to pay a restocking fee.
Restocking fee.
How dumb is that?
That is a fucking scam if I ever heard it. Restocking.
It's the truth. But so now what I tell people is there's plenty of sites that's out there that's selling what they call AAA quality that you can get it for under retail. And they're the exact same shoe. I have a few pairs of them that I found out. I used to have a guy way back in the day when I used to collect sneakers like crazy. And he was like, yeah, I can get it to you for this price because it's a direct factory connection. Somebody from the Philippines. I got a guy in Manila that I email right now. I'd be like, hey, I need these shoes. I can get them. And they come under retail because they know how to sell it for. But they can't sell it for that. So all they're going to do is tell one of the factory workers, hey, on the tag on the inside, flip the bitch upside down.
Mm.
Now, the inspection's going to come, oh, this is wrong. Mm-hmm. Put it into the pile. These are the same shoes. And then they'll sell it to you for like, they have all those internet sites. So they sell it to you for, you know, way under retail price. They're the same shoes. And then people be like, oh, those are fakes. How? You can't tell. Are you
right, really exactly.
My shoes like that. You stupid. Can't tell.
Right, right.
And exactly. then even if it is fake, why do you care? You see what I'm saying? Like, why are you worrying about what the fuck I got on me? You know, on my feet. Like what? Like some people just. Ooh.
How a whole lot of people just. Mm-hmm. They need slapping. Just line them up.
Yeah,
bah, bah, bah.
Yeah they really
no
do.
Reason. I mean, like. Like we're really sitting here in 2021 talking about why are people still fighting over materialistic shit?
Mm-hmm.
And yeah.
I mean, we all know where this starts at. You know what I'm saying? But you know, I don't want to go too far off because I feel like we kind of ventured far from the DMX thing. But what I do want to say is that you know, back then, you know, in the 90s, early 2000s, but not necessarily he was in the early 2000s, like that little sweet gray area, right before the crunk music and shit came out, but you know, he really had a foothold in a lot of stuff. And, you know, a person who was doing similar things that he was doing that not a lot of people talk about or maybe not know about was Brandy. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. DMX and Brandy, what were they both doing? They were touring at the same time, putting out movies at the same time, putting out great music at the same time on TV shows. Brandy had Moesha. DMX had what? Belly. You know, Cradle to the Grave, you know, all of these great movies and stuff like that on features and all this stuff. And it's like, you know, it's only a few of we all have every single person on this earth, I truly feel has special energy within them. But only a select few people actually know how to use that. And he definitely was one of those people. You know what I'm saying? For however long he was relevant, he maximized every single opportunity he had. You know what I'm saying? Kind of like 50 Cent. 50 Cent said, I don't know how long I'm going to be hot, so I'm going to maximize every ounce of this stardom. And, you know, put 50 Cent up there too. You know, just take advantage of every opportunity. You know, just real smart. Know how to move. Know who to trust. Know who not to trust. You know, and just, you know, losing somebody like that, I feel like, you know, because I have a different outlook on death. Death doesn't make me sad anymore. You know what I'm saying? Losing people, it doesn't necessarily make me sad because, for one, they don't have to deal with the bullshit on this plane anymore. And two, hopefully they left a good enough legacy for people to remember them by. Because the one thing that a person cannot lose or have taken from them is the memories. We all are trapped in our own heads 24/7. We think about things that we enjoy. We sometimes are interrupted by things that, you know, we didn't like that happened to us in the past. And, you know, DMX is one of those cats, man, whether it be his music, his movies, his interviews, anything like that, his positive imagery, you know, or his positive outlook on life, you know, battling the demons that he had. You know, we all were definitely blessed to either have known him, seen him in, you know, live in concert, or, you know, at the very least to listen to his music, you know, because he's definitely one of those cats that put what he was feeling into his music. You know what I'm saying? Substance to sheer. And I'm slipping. I'm falling. I can't get up. That whole song. Who can't relate? I'm getting goosebumps just thinking about that song. Who can't relate to some shit like that? You know, absolutely. The relatability, you know, it's, I feel like he may have been gone too soon, but, you know, as long as he's not suffering anymore, I can live with that. I can live with that.
Cool. Kev, man, what's your closing, man, on Dark Man X, man?
Man, we lost another good one, man. That's all I can say. He had his demons. He couldn't handle it. You remind me of Whitney Houston. She couldn't handle her demons. She ended up the same way.
You either, no. You know, go ahead, Jabal.
No, I just thought about this. Did y'all read anything about him taking that vaccine before he died?
No.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
No.
He did take the vaccine?
Yes, he did.
That's what they say. He took it 2 days later, and then he had all those problems with you know, with his health and stuff like that. That's when all the, you know, the notices came out that he was in the hospital and stuff. So I just wanted to make sure I wasn't the only one. You know what I'm saying?
Okay. No, I heard that too.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah.
And a lot of those actual news sites are trying to silence it.
Yes. Yes.
Because they want to pin that whole, oh, he succumbed to, and everybody was saying, oh, he succumbed to like another drug overdose. Like, no, he literally just, his family made a statement to say he literally just got his vaccine.
Yeah.
Done about 3 or 4 days ago. And then he was in the hospital.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, that's a whole nother episode right there too.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. So, I would have to do some more research on whatever other things that he may have been battling. Health-wise, before I speak on, you know, just the vaccine aspect of it, me personally,
saw him in a,
you know,
there was a video that they did with like with the Locks and everybody recently, and he was just on Drink Champs with Noriega.
Yes, yeah. I did see that episode.
He looked like his health was going down.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? And that's just me because. He was on multiple episodes of Drink Champs, not the first one that he was on, where he, you know, still was like DMX, the, you know, his normal self. But that last one, that recent one that he was just on, and then there was a video that came out that that him and the Lox and was like a couple other New York artists did, and he didn't look like himself, you know, from what we know he looked like.
Right.
He looked off. Like he looked like very weak.
Yeah.
Like mentally and physically. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's crazy.
So, I don't know. I mean, that's something else that can play a factor too. So
yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah. Yeah. Man. Hey man, we gonna close it out, man. I'm gonna throw it to Junior real quick, man. What do you want to say in closing? Anything, whatever. Ain't got to be just on DMX, whatever.
Well, cocaine is a hell of a drug. No, I'm just kidding. No, man, you know, I want to close by saying, man, I want to close by saying, you know, if you're going through something, man, whatever demons, you know, because we all have our vices, you know, and I'm not too proud to admit one of my vices. You know, whenever I get too stressed, whenever I feel like the walls are crashing in, I tend to eat. You know what I'm saying? It has this calming factor, you know, and that's something that I have to deal with. You know, But regardless of your vice, regardless of what you're going through, you know, there's always a different way. There's always a different option. Because one thing that a person who's going through a lot of shit feels is though there are limited options. There are plenty options. There are plenty ways to find release instead of succumbing to, you know, drugs, alcohol, you know, all kind of abuse, things of that nature. You know, DMX, I saw that interview. I can't remember who it was, but it was very recent where he talked about his first time, you know, doing drugs. He was tricked into it. And that kind of, you know, catapulted him all the way until, you know, up until now. And, you know, having to deal, I just can't imagine having to deal with that pressure for 40 plus years of just this demon on your back, man. And the hyper-masculine society that we grew up in, where you can't show emotion, you can't ask for help, you just had to figure that shit out or whatever. I feel like, you know, if you're going through something like that, man, woman, indifferent, if you're going through something like that, just reach out for help. You got people around you that care about you. You got people who are willing to listen. I know everybody has to act busy and shit like that, but you literally have people out there who are willing to listen to your problems, who are willing to understand what you're going through. They can relate to you, maybe. You know, try your best to just put down the vice and just, you know, work on yourself. Just work on yourself. That's all I say.
Kev, closing.
Closing comments? No, nothing really, man. You know, another thing DMX had brought out was dogs. Nobody really, you know, talked about all the dogs that he used to have. The one he introduced me to a new dog when he was out in Myrtle Beach. It's called a Borble Massive. I never saw one. That sucker looked like a lion. That's how big that dog was.
Wow.
A Borble Massive?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's an African Massive. That's what the guy told me. And I never saw one. That sucker was so huge, I never knew a dog could get that big.
Jesus Christ.
I'm about to look that up.
Yeah, I'm looking it up right now. He's not lying. This is a big ass dog. Oh wait, let me see.
Jabbar Senior, man, what you got in closing?
Yeah, man, I'm gonna kind of chime in what Junior was saying there. True confession time for me personally. When I, you know, I had seen DMX share his first time, his first experience with cocaine. Well, in this case, crack. You know, and same thing happened to me, man. Same thing happened in 1988. I'll never forget it. And the only reason why I'm put that out there, and it was similar. Me and my partners, I think we were shooting a hot gun or something like that out there. In a secluded place, and we had, you know, had plans to smoke some weed and all that stuff. And so one of them, hey, we're gonna smoke the Wooler. I'm like, all right, what's that? Oh, you know, you see, you know, I ain't thinking about it. I'm 16. Just, you know, I had smoked weed before I drank and all that. But this was really different. This was extremely different. And I had to go to work. And I was the driver, you know, and we were literally 10 miles from the job, me and some coworkers and some of our friends that we all went to school together. And I say all that to say this because the one thing that I know DMX didn't have that I did was the wrath of my father if he found out. Mm. And so we can't understate how important really strong male role models in your life and the effect, because out of all of the times I've heard him, you know, of course that has been missing for him. And of course it did, you know, for him, unfortunately translate to some of his children. I don't know if you're all familiar with the Jan Van Zandt, especially did and all
I
of
believe,
that.
I believe, yeah.
So to that, man, I got to tell you, I feel a certain kind of way. Because, you know, I can't, you know, tell you how long ago 1988 was, first and last time for me. I had no reason to ever go back down that road. I won't say I was tricked as much as I was just going along with the crowd, didn't know what exactly I was doing. However, I remember that high to this day. And the only thing I could tell you is I never wanted to feel that way ever again, because I had no control over anything. And I did drive to work, and I still, to this day, was the only time I've ever driven. I've driven a period before, I'll be honest, but I've never not knew how I got from point A to point B. You know, and that's why to them, somebody was looking over me type of moments. But to that, while I was high, I was worried about, like, oh, God, boy, my daddy killed me. Oh, what the hell did I got myself? But, you know, I know, man, they have made it a big plague in our community, the fatherless, you know, people and all this crap. But, you know, with all the men on this platform here, you know, we know, you know, we know what time it is. And we know how important Black male leadership is in our lives. I'm, you know, for DMX himself, man. And of course, once again, we're around the same age. So, you know, I could identify with what was going on around the time. Of course, I couldn't identify what was going up with Yonkers or whatnot. But down here, it was the same thing. You know, as far as that's, you know, your influences, the things you can get into, the vices that you get exposed to, influenced by, that could shape and change the rest of your life. Like we all do really have them, right? That being said, I feel like for him, he actually, you know, just knowing his story, he made it probably further than he probably expected to make. You know what I'm saying?
I'm so
happy that we had him, man. He was able to give us, and you know, so it feels like the fans like us was a reason why he kept going. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Until this point here. So with that, man, I'm gonna take his short life and legacy. And, you know, and some, like I said, some relatability in the same fashion, I'm telling you. And ever since he went in the hospital, I've heard, you know, clips of that. He's done a couple of interviews while he first, you know, smoked crack. You know what I'm saying? And I got to tell you, man, when they say, I know, maybe I didn't, you know, because I smoked it with marijuana. Same thing he did. I don't know. I know I never hit a glass pipe before, nothing like that. But these things came alive when cats like me and DMX was coming in the, you know, adult age or whatever, you know. And, you know, but sometimes a little, well, I would say a little, because it's a great big thing, just to have, you know, that strong influence over you that you have to have a reverential respect for, that could keep you in line, man. So I'm proud of him for that. You know what I'm saying? That he made it that far, you know, I really am. So that's what I got, man. You know, our rest of power, Doc Man X, man. You know, he was one of the greats.
Big and old. Close it out for me, man.
And just to piggyback off of what Junior Senior said, everybody was saying, it's the same concept. You know what I'm saying? It's, you know, his legacy is what it is. It's cemented in time. He was one of the greats. You know, he really put his stamp on the culture of hip hop. And amongst relatable people as well for whatever situation it is, you know, multiple kids, you know, was struggling with demons, you know, fighting back and forth, you know, just. But he lived his life the only way Earl Simmons DMX could live his life. Right. No matter what it came with, no matter what it ended up with. And, you know, to Junior sentiment, I agree 1,000% with people who are just like, you know, get off that fake shit, get off that corny shit, you know, give people flowers while they're here, you know. Yes. Now it's like it's too trivial to do that and say, oh, you know, now watch, people gonna come out with DMX t-shirts and stuff like that. Like, shit. We know y'all wasn't really rocking with this man after the you know, Romeo Must Die movies, and once he fell off, and when he moved out to Arizona to get his life together, like, people, like, it stopped.
Mm-hmm.
It was quiet. Mm-hmm. No one was checking for him, nothing. You know, now all of a sudden, like, oh, you know, he was so much influential. Like, some people he will be, you know what I'm saying? For your true hip-hop heads, yeah, he holds the place in our hearts and minds. And, you know, in closing, all I want to just say is I hope his family finds the comfort and, you know, that healing that they can move on. That's really it. That's all I got.
10-4, man. 10-4. Definitely a icon in the culture, you know. I really don't have any much more to add that I didn't say. And the last episode, man. So I appreciate everybody coming through on the panel, giving their different perspective and, you know, on DMX and all that good stuff, man. We got some heavy episodes that we're going to have to tackle the summer. So
yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
For the listeners out there, for the listeners out there, hopefully I don't lose y'all, but we got to talk about this stuff, man. So, hey, it is what it is. Until next time, Partner Perspective.